Chapter 1. What then of Soa? The holy Mosorox led the goodwife Lilt across the dunes of the Sidon Mishada. In the arm of the gods, the honeybee guided her through the rocky crags and fed her from his mouth. In the highest peak, she found a cave, and there the two-tailed lion tested her. When she proved worthy, the gods graced her with knowledge and revealed the sacred colors. They gifted her with the first Soa charms wrought entirely from diamond, red, yellow, and blue. Desert Legends. Nayira scrunched bare feet into golden sand at the edge of the waterline. The damp grains oozed over her toes, evoking memories of digging for mussels on the shores of the Sidon Mishada. The waves sucked backward, the wriggling marks quickly erased. There was a lesson about time there, especially for someone marked by prophecy. She dismissed the thought and turned her attention away from the gentle waves of the Bay of Karna to the three men behind her. Her right-hand husband, Darasaya, squinted at the horizon. The pale northern sun of this continent sparkled in the glass beads of Soa charms dangling from his wrist. He wore a yellow scarf draped over his corkscrew curls, throwing shadows across his bronze face. Nayira's heart constricted in her chest. The scarf yearned back to his kabbalad, the robes worn by a priest of the right-hand god. His actual vestments lay somewhere in a Veroan prison, along with a metal flower that had sent them on this quest. Darasaya's flesh had healed, but his soul still carried scars from the time plundered by their enemies. Her left-hand husband, Tahil, spread canvas for them all to sit on. White teeth flashed in his night-dark face as he smiled at her. His bare chest harkened back to their homeland as well, though he wore red pants rather than the loincloth of a left-hand priest. The old man, Mikkel, stood on the corner of the tarp as it flapped in the breeze. He had discarded the black robe of a monk of Viero, adopting instead the tight pants they called hose and a loose yellow tunic. Grey hair riffled like sea foam above his pale visage, blue eyes flickering in Ayera's direction every now and again. The weight of his expectations bore down on her. For him, she represented the culmination of a prophecy that guided a secret order of priests in the Empire of Lumiaron. Nayira smiled at him, but uncertainty trembled through her. She knew the burden of leadership well, but she'd never been cast as the prophesied hero. This quest had started as a search for the goddess. Instead, they found a hidden priesthood and a land at war with itself. She sat on the canvas blanket and ran her fingers over her Soa charms. Her touch lingered on the breath of the goddess, and she prayed for wisdom, lips moving in silent entreaty. She met Mikkel's blue gaze. "Tell us about this hidden priesthood." "Holiness." Nayira held up her hand. "No, I am not balancer of anything. In this empire of yours, titles matter, and we should only use them in the right place. Good wife will do." The corners of Mikkel's mouth twitched. "Good wife, then. We work among the people as best we can, disguising our worship as the veneration of animal spirits. Viero leaves such practices alone, as long as they do not extend beyond a local region."
"But you were a monk of Viero, a high-ranking one at that."
The hill's basso voice rumbled deeper than the sea.
"Is that common for the priests?"
"No, good husband." Mikkel leaned back on his arms. "I was born to the faithful and called by the right-hand god while still in boyhood. At 16, our priest asked if I would undertake to be a spy on behalf of the Hidden Council. Little did I know then what such a thing entailed. But young men are often rash, and I was no exception.
It sounded far more exciting than living out my life ministering to a sleepy northern village. Nayera bore her finger into the sand. She didn't want to suspect Mikkel, but he had lived more of his life as a monk of Viero than as a priest of the right-hand god. Could they trust him in full? He had sent word to others of the hidden faith. They would have to move with caution until they had truly confirmed his tales. She met his blue gaze. A whole village worships the gods? Yes, good wife. In Laroche, Mikkel drew two narrow lines in the sand. The north can only be reached through the town of Telvis, and the only Veroan temple in Laroche is there. His eyes drifted up the beach to the camp where soldiers in azure tabards cooked their supper. The Larochean dukes have always bottled up Viero at Telvis so that the Rulara people could worship their spirits in peace. For the Hidden Three, it is a blessing. As long as we stay below the sight of the sash, this place is a haven for us. The Hidden Three. Nayera rubbed over her Soa charms, her flesh suddenly cool. Is that how you define the relationships of the gods? Mikkel ducked his head. We call the gods the Three, and our faith is hidden. So, yes. Nayera frowned at her fingernails. And how do you define their relationship to each other? Thoughts of heresy danced in her mind. The gods were a threesome. It was why her marriage was holy. We don't. Mikkel's throat bowl slid up and down as he swallowed. One of the tenets of faith is that we do not define the relationship of the gods. That is for the scales of the desert to know. He bowed. We await your word on it. Blowing out a relieved sigh, Nayera met her husband's gazes. Tahil spoke. Then the gods are a threesome. But how did you make headway in Viero? Mikkel's gaze drifted out over the ocean. There are factions among the monks, and I found it easy to make friends on the moderate side. Eventually, my influence grew sufficient that the previous wheel's champion had little choice in elevating me. However, once the sacrist monks elected Vishard to the highest office, my influence waned radically despite my rank. Mikkel spread his hands with a grimace. He is from a hardline faction, and I could not find it in me to mimic the ideology they demanded. Darasaya drew a bee in the sand, wings touching the edges of the canvas. We will want to know more of these factions, I think. But I have a different question. Why do you wear no Soa charms? Mikkel rubbed over his wrists. For secrecy. Some of the priests wear Soa charms, mostly wrought of copper. The worshippers wear colored bracelets, red, yellow, and blue woven together. All of us have charms that represent the gods and their spirits, but we keep them hidden. Nayera raised her eyebrows. Divine power would burn flesh if channeled through metal. Tahil voiced her concern. How do you bring the power of the gods to bear with copper? Mikkel's white eyebrows drew a puzzled line. The power of the gods? Nayera and her husbands exchanged wide-eyed glances. Darasaya found his voice first. You do not use the power of the gods? I don't know what you are talking about. Another time, Nayera held up her hand. Before she could say more, Mikkel scrambled to his feet. Drawn by his abrupt action, Nayera and her husband rose, turning to face Duchess Claire de La Roche. A bare day ago, they had met the woman as a blood-soaked mage in the forest. Now, she wore elegant sky-blue skirts swirling below a loose white shirt with tight cuffs. A purple sash cut across her body, a giant serpent writhing on the shoulder. The elaborate embroidery put Nayera in mind of formal heraldry, and surely that was what this item represented.
At Claire's waist lay a second badge, a white snowflake on a deep blue field. Two tassels tangled on her hip, one as red as her hair, the other an azure hue that almost got lost against her skirt. "Your Grace." Mickle bowed deeply, ending the elegant obeisance on one knee. "Brother," her lips drew to a tight grimace. "Mickle, you are dismissed." The ease of authority did not surprise Nayira. Her brief interaction with this woman had revealed a leader who held power in her own hands, with all the loneliness implied in that life. Mickle left with a few backward glances, but Nayira kept her eyes focused on the red-headed woman. This duchess ruled the northern duchy of La Roche, apparently the home of many of the followers of the gods. For their sake, Nayira had to ensure a friendly relationship at least. "Your Grace." She bowed as she would have done to a ranking priest, but stopped short of kneeling. Respect to the authority, yes. But going so far as subservience would set an awkward precedence. Her husbands followed her lead. "Good wife and husbands," Claire said, her voice a pleasant mezzo-soprano on the ear. She would sing the prayers beautifully if she converted. Nayira dismissed the errant thought. "Your Grace." She let the honorific hang there, giving the tall woman a verbal invitation. "I would like to ask some questions about your doctrine." "Of course. Shall we sit?" Claire sat on the edge of the blanket, tucking her skirts under her legs. Nayira settled down facing the Duchess, with Tahil on her left and Darasaya on her right. "What would you like to know?" "Do you believe a person's life is shaped by anything before their birth?" Tahil folded his hands in his lap. "That is a deep question, with a simple and complicated answer. Every soul strives to gain the knowledge to pass beyond the wheel and through the hub to rejoin the threesome divinity. The gods know this, and they lay a path for each of us to walk." Darasaya picked up the lesson as their left-hand husband paused. "This road should teach the soul lessons that are required to leave behind this place." He patted the beach sand. "However, it is just a suggested path. A soul may travel the wheel many times, and some cycles that person will make choices that lead them down paths not laid out by the gods." He spread his hands. "Such is the nature of men." Red-gold eyebrows knotted over green eyes as Claire considered the three of them. "Is there anything a person can do to remove themselves from the wheel?" Nayira sat up straight, rearing back from the words. "What? No, this is not possible." "Never?" "No. Who would claim such a thing?" "Viero." Claire's gaze lifted away from Nayira's and tracked the waves instead. "The teachings say that there are acts grave enough to remove the spirit from the wheel. In this case, they claim the wheel will tread the spirit to dust beneath the iron-shod rim." The words had the rhythm of a litany. Had she learnt them as a child? "It is a false teaching," Tahil said, his voice flat and hard. "A soul could visit horror upon the world, and yet the wheel will wash away all of it. Murder, blasphemy, heresy, all vanish once the soul returns to the wheel and they are born fresh to try again. To claim otherwise is to tell an absurd lie. The gods made the universe. What trespass could a man commit that would cause such beings to shun him?" Claire looked up at the blue sky and back down at Nayira. "What about animal spirits? How do you feel about people praying to those?" Nayira traced over Darasaya's bee, weighing her answer against what Mickle had told them of the hidden faith. There are spirits who serve the will of the gods. The two-tailed lion, the... She paused, looking for a word for Masuraks in the Empire's language. I don't know if you have them here. It is something like the giant snake on your sash, but one can make a bond with them and ride them. Claire's brow furrowed. We don't have those, but we have a giant serpent spirit. Which god is that for? The hill's eyes fixed on her snake badge. The left hand. And the honeybee is for the right hand, Darasaya said. But there are other spirits in the world, of course. Sometimes man may entreat them for aid. This is not against the will of the gods. Claire rose as abruptly as she had sat down. Thank you. She turned and walked away before any of them could find their feet. What was that about? Darasaya asked in temple tongue. The hill dug up a handful of sand, making a hole beside the blanket. She wants to convert. That one? Darasaya took some of the hill's miniature mind dump and dribbled it to form a tower. She believes in her own power. The waves pounded onto the beach and sucked back into the surf, leaving a salty tang in the air. Neira leaned on her elbows. It won't be the first time a leader has followed the faith without belief. Those questions were certainly leading somewhere. We have a long ride to this rebel camp of theirs. The hill extended his spit to become a moat around Darasaya's tower. I'll bet a chime to a pea she speaks to us again. We must find out more from Mikkel, Neira said. If his information is correct, this woman holds the key to a place where the followers of the gods already live in great numbers. We need her. More even than we need Alunt? Darasaya asked. Alunt is a prince about to enter rebellion. The hill smashed the tower, ebony fist drilling the soft sand down layer by layer to form a crater. His status depends on his dukes. And we have one of them right here asking complicated questions. She is a far more powerful ally. Darasaya smoothed out the hole Tahil had made and started heaping sand again. I hope we're doing the right thing. We came here seeking the voice of the goddess. Neira placed her hands over his, drawing him away from his destroyed construction. I know. My loves, before this I worried that we had left the path. But we cannot forsake these people. They believe that their souls could be destroyed. How can we leave them in bondage to such an idea? The hill curled his arm over her shoulder. We are called. We will. Answer. Leaning into his embrace, Neira drew Darasaya to lie beside them. The sun stroked warm lines across her skin, and the waves susurrated on the sand. Light scintillated through her Soa charms, the refractions a reminder that her life belonged to divinity. Quietly, she made peace with the prophecy. Then we are committed to the Hidden Three? Darasaya grimaced. As long as no one tells me I can't be married to the two of you. Dahil's grin flashed white. Over their dead bodies. Their days of travel along the isthmus passed slowly, surrounded by soldiers wearing the azure tabard of Claire de la Roche's duchy. Peasants scrambled off the road to make way for her banner, even the heavy wagons of merchants drawing to the verge. Darasaya carved molds and discussed the creation of Soa charms through ceramics and glass with Mikkel. Tahil and Nayira helped where they could, though their artistry did not compare with their right-hand husband's skills. But if they found priests who could learn to wield the power of the gods, they would need such charms. Both Prince Alunt and Louis de la Roche, Claire's red-headed son, sought Nayira and her husband's company with increasing frequency. Louis was fascinated by the threesome's tales of Kisangi and spent many bells listening to their stories of home. Alunt sought knowledge of the religion of the Hidden Three. Neira answered his questions honestly, that kept an eye on Claire through each exchange. The Hill had been right that first day on the beach. They needed the Duchess more than the Prince, and Claire's eyes followed Alunt every time he sought to speak with the priests. She was a hard woman to read, but Nayira thought disapproval flickered behind that tight expression. Ever at the Duchess's side rode the girl, Isabella. Even in daylight, her eyes shone with a light of magic, blinding her to the observable world. They still needed to speak to Claire about the child and the words of prophecy that seemed to refer to her. But the road was not the right place for that. All these complicated situations tumbled through Nayira's mind as Darasaya called Mikkel over for a conversation about Viero. Alunt rode some distance off, talking with his lover Raoul. Louis rode between his mother and his cousin Giselle. It seemed a good time for a quiet talk with Mikkel. Nayira patted her horse's shoulder. The beasts remained an uncomfortable ride, but her muscles had adapted well enough to the barrel-like seat. Tell me about the females of Viero. They are assassins, good wife. Mikkel picked at the steel buckle on his leather reins. At least, the ones we interact with are. I assume such things do not suit some of them, but they stay in the hidden monasteries of the women. You were high in the ranks of Viero. The Hill shifted in his saddle, pushing up on the stirrups till daylight shone between his drawstring pants and the leather seat. Do you not know where these hidden monasteries are? I'm sorry, good husband, but no. Only those in the inner circle of the Wheel's Champion know where the women go. Nayira traced her fingers along the smooth curves of her Soa charms. When they had first arrived in Lumiaron, they had been accompanied by two companions assigned to them by the Master Smith of the Order of Daggers. In Lumios, their jailers had taken those two women away. Would they have been taken to these secret places? Or simply killed? Was one of them the traitor that had betrayed Nayira and her husband to Viero? If she could, she needed to send word to Kisangi. Traitors among the daggers represented a terrible threat to the Hub throne. The Hill's voice broke through the maelstrom of thoughts. What do you know of the female doctrine of Viero? Women are not called to teach. Ice wreathed Claire's voice as she joined the conversation. A woman's role is to correct sin. The words made Nayira's skin crawl. That is an interesting point of view. Claire gave a thin-lipped smile that did not reach her eyes. I promised you a boon when we met. She unhooked the azure tassel from her sash and extended it to Nayira. There is normally a ceremony that goes with this, but these are awkward times. My tassel entitles you to any favor that is within my power to grant, and extends beyond my reign to that of my successor. Her gaze flickered to Mikkel, and he inclined his head. Nayira took the tassel and ran her fingers along the threads. A narrow ribbon bound the loop that hooked onto the sash, a snake pattern embroidered on it. Purple thread edged the blue strip of cloth, only visible on close inspection. On the forked tips of the ribbon, geometric designs had been etched onto thin silver plates stitched to the material, giving the cloth an unexpected weight. Thank you. She inclined her head. The tassel represented safety for both her and her husband's. A tremble shuddered through her hands, a tension she had not even been aware of lessening. At least they would not starve in this land. Alunt and Raoul rode over, both of them shooting quick looks at the tassel gleaming blue in the early afternoon sun. There is more. Claire smoothed down her horse's black mane, gaze flicking to Alunt and back to Nayira. You rescued Louis, who is my son and heir. Your magic saved the life of my prince that I would follow as emperor. I will build a temple in Telvis to the three gods. Raoul sucked in his breath, his eyes widening. Before he could speak, Mikkel gave a delicate cough, his fingers playing a tattoo along his belt. "Viero won't like that, Your Grace. Viero tried to murder my son." Storms raged in her frigid green gaze. "I will expel the monks from Talvis." "I would add to your thanks, Your Grace," Alund said, eagerness riding his voice. "It is my desire to convert to the faith of the Hidden Three." "I don't think..." Raoul's voice trailed off and he glanced from Alund to Claire, rubbing his palms on his pants. Claire's eyebrows edged together. "Your Highness, I am not speaking of conversion. There are those in the north who worship these gods, and for them I will build a temple. But for you to convert would not be wise. The north is not the only duchy that supports you in this rebellion. I strongly advise you to take counsel with Duke Ruffy and Duchess Regent Yolanda before taking such a precipitous step." Alund's hands knotted in his reins, and muscles in his jaw jumped under his skin. "The Wheel's champion stands shoulder to shoulder with my father's murderer. Why would I support their faith?" Raoul reached over and closed his fingers on Alund's wrist. "Viero has guided the Empire for millennia. Discarding the teachings without even considering reforms will not sit well with the soldiers or the Sashed. The bulk of the army is from Trunchilag, and we're a conservative duchy. Just have a little patience. There will be opportunity to prove the perfidy of Viro's leadership, and then we can act, one way or another. Her Grace is right. At least wait until you've spoken to my uncle." Nayira's belly cramped with conflicting emotions. If Alund converted, it might give them a powerful ally. But not if it lost them his supporters. Should she counsel patience? But she could hardly recommend a soul remaining mired in heresy. Alund gave an inarticulate growl in the back of his throat, but nodded, putting an end to Nayira's internal debate. "I will wait until we have sat in council. When do we arrive at Isilra?" A piercing shriek from the heavens interrupted Claire's reply, sunlight flashing on blue and red wings. Nayira's horse trotted sideways as bile climbed up her throat and her legs tightened about his barrel-like body. The last time she had seen one of these Bluron birds, it had been guiding a small army of enemies to their location. She exchanged a worried glance with Darasaya and Tahil, but Claire held out her arm, and the bird landed in a flash of crimson claws. Its red eyes fixed on the Duchess, and she cut a slight wound in her wrist. The sharp beak dipped into her blood, and the sack-like lower mandible sucked in and out as it drank. Claire unhooked a tube as thick as Nayira's thumb from a black harness strapped around the feathered body as Isabella rode up to take the Bluron. Claire's fingers traced the bottom of the tube, and she held up her hand, halting the men. "We'll make camp here." Nayira eyed the sun, which stood just past the highest point. She bit the inside of her cheek. They would lose half a day of travel in hostile territory due to this unexpected rest. What had Claire deduced just from touching the wooden container?